Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network, deep behind the orange curtain, Saturday morning. Let's do this. Now, it's funny we say the orange curtain. It's here in Orange County. We always refer to ourselves this way because it was a refuge of conservatism in an otherwise wackadoodle left-wing Southern California. And that's just not the case anymore. We know this. We followed the story. And I bring it up now because I just got back from Nevada. I was in Las Vegas. And there, a similar phenomenon has occurred. In the last elections, the whole state, every election went Democrat, but for one. And the problem with this is it's this situation is happening, and it's happening in Nevada. It's happening in Texas and other states that are Republican states run by, for the most part, small government, freedom loving patriots. Read true conservatives. And these states, everything works. Everything's great. And as it all goes to hell in liberal California and elsewhere, New Jersey, New York, and these companies are relocating their big workforces to places like Texas and Nevada, these states are slowly turning blue. And of course, you'd think that these left-wing geniuses would have figured all this out, that they would go, oh, what we did in California didn't work. That's why Toyota's moving us to Texas. But as we know, liberals are not the brightest people around. And consequently, these guys are moving into Nevada, as I was talking about this with some colleagues. They're moving into Nevada and they're voting for Democrats. They want big government. They want everything regulated. They want a lot of compassion for the homeless. And it's the same old shit show, if you know what I mean. Drop the T just to disguise the word a little bit. Anyway, so that was an observation. And if you live in Texas, I know many of you listen to the program there. And if you live in Nevada, you live in these states that historically have always been small government, conservative, freedom loving states. You're going to feel the pinch. And I can tell you from what is going on in California, good luck. It's not going to be pretty. Did you see this this SUV that drove into a Chicago area mall? I love those headlines, by the way. An SUV plowed into mall, mass casualty response called for by authorities. First of all, it's as if the SUV had a mind of its own. Yeah, well, right. It's just like when AK-47s and AR-15s kill people. So no mention of course, the driver. Don't really know exactly what happened, but I think the funnier part of the story played out on Twitter yesterday. This is hilarious. So there was, I don't know, there was a guy or a gal. There was a person that was on the scene and took some video. And the video that they took, they posted it to their Twitter account. And the video, because it showed the car hitting kiosks and slamming into storefronts and people running, pretty shocking video. So it got a lot of views, and it went, as the kids say, went viral. Well, in the process of it going viral, the legitimate media, right, CBS, for example, reached out to this guy on Twitter and commented on his post. Did you take this video? Can we use it? And if we use it, we, of course, will credit you. And the guy quickly said, yes, you can do all this. I had a check for you to make sure that what happened, what I thought would happen, did in fact happen. And sure enough, now, okay, I'm going to get a little inappropriate here just for a second. I'm not making this up. The guy who took the video, the Twitter user, his handle is Nips Fall Off. And every serious news outlet that ran this video had a credit at Nips Fall Off every time they ran the video, and it's all over. They didn't edit it. They couldn't. They were, well, I'll give you a little lawyer insight. They were bound by agreement. And you got to credit the user. So it's funny, we are so sensitive to block everything and to protect ourselves from the least bit of inappropriateness. And I'm assuming it wasn't a racial slur. I'm assuming it was a reference to some body parts. But nonetheless, nobody edited it out, and it ended up making the evening news all over the place. So I thought that was, I enjoyed that. That was pretty funny. The big story right now that everyone is melting down over is Trump's whistleblower claim. Do you know what a whistleblower is? Yeah, anyone can become a whistleblower, theoretically, in the right setting. Most states, including the federal government, have protections for whistleblowers. They don't blow whistles. That's where it comes from. They are people who come forward to report wrongdoing. Usually means a violation of a statute or of a law, criminal law, can refer to some procedural things. But it's designed to encourage employees to report wrongdoing so that the wrongdoing stops. Now, we all understand in the context, let's say, of a factory where there's an unsafe condition. The idea is to protect from termination and from adverse employment action the employee that goes and reports whatever's going on there in order to save lives or prevent injury. Now, this whistleblower, according to multiple news outlets, was so appalled by the way Trump was dealing with the Ukraine in a phone call with Ukraine's new president that was sworn in back in May. And this phone call apparently allegedly promised some alarming quid pro quo. I'll give you something if you give me something in return. So what this whistleblower did is he filed a grievance with the Inspector General, Michael Atkinson. Now, this is a Trump appointee. This is a Trump guy. Although, you know, Trump's appointed a number of people to positions who don't necessarily always see eye to eye to him. So we don't know much about this guy. But nonetheless, he goes ahead and he reviews the whistleblower complaint and sends it on to the Director of Intelligence, Joseph McGuire. And McGuire takes it, reviews it, and at this point gives just notice of it to Congress, but won't get into any details, citing executive privilege. Now, you want to know the most alarming thing that is not being reported about this anywhere? Well, actually, it's being reported on CNN, but you have to have more than a 10-second attention span to get to it. And that is that the whistleblower, who on the basis of whose allegations this entire storm has blown into open view, where you have Adam Schiff now in Congress once again demanding that this be investigated fully and that the president be held accountable for his treasonous behavior. All of this is on the basis of something that the whistleblower didn't actually hear himself. The whistleblower was not in the room. And wait for it. I'm going to tell you right now, I have the, CNN did a piece about this. And they go into, paragraphs upon paragraphs of explaining all the evil, bad stuff Trump did. Because he apparently, allegedly, was trying to get the Ukraine to investigate Joe Biden for previously, when Biden was VP under Obama, Biden's efforts to get his son protected from an investigation into a little hanky-panky that was going on back then. And I'll explain all that in a moment. So allegedly, Trump gets on the phone call and says, hey, you know, I want you to investigate Joe Biden, who also at this point is running for president, presumably to unseat, in an effort to unseat Trump. right? So everybody's up in arms about this. But here's the relevant piece today, published today on CNN.com. And I had to scroll through this damn thing. Yet, no, they did not lead with it. This is like the Kavanaugh deal. The most important thing in it, they bury it on page 300. And then when they do a when they do a quick read of it, it's, you know, they omit it altogether. So here's what if you had patience to read all the way to the end of a terrible CNN hit piece, here's what you'd find. And I quote, "The whistleblower didn't have direct knowledge of the communications, an official briefed on the matter told CNN. Instead, the whistleblower's concerns came in part from learning information that was not obtained during the course of their work. And those details have played a role in the administration's determination that the complaint didn't fit the reporting requirements under the intelligence whistleblower law." Well, of course it didn't meet the requirements if that's true. And you know why? Because it's flipping hearsay. Hearsay is words of another person that are unreliable, that are being passed down. You ever play the game telephone? You know, you sat in a circle with all your friends in the third grade and you whisper something to Johnny. Johnny whispers that same thing to Susie. By the time it gets all the way around back, it's something totally different and everybody laughs about it. There are very, very specific reasons why administrative proceedings and courts in particular do not accept hearsay testimony. They do in certain very defined exceptions to the rule. But there's a reason for all of that. It's because it's unreliable. So now I'm going to tell you what happened. I wasn't even there. But, you know, I know these people like the back of my hand. So I'm going to tell you exactly what occurred here. You've got some deep state Trump-hating stooge, some low amoeba on the totem pole that doesn't even have the chops to be in the room when the president is speaking. Because if they weren't there, let's back up here a little bit. If they weren't there, how important are they? So you've got some lower rung guy. It could be a woman, too. We don't know. Unidentified whistleblower. So this person took it upon themselves to make a big stink about something that they heard about at the water cooler. Or maybe based on some inferences that they made based on a report that they read about the phone call. It's not like a transcript of this gets circulated to everybody all around. So I believe at the end of the day, this thing is going to just dissolve into a puddle of mess. And the puddle of mess may very well roll downstream. And when we come back, I'm going to explain this because this is opening opening a can of worms for Biden that he does not want opened. If I were Joe Biden, and frankly, if I was a Democrat sitting on the Hill right now, this is how stupid these guys are. If I was Adam Schiff and I wanted to, if my goal was to unseat Trump and I wanted to have, I don't know, the Democratic Party's best chance at doing that, I think it's still Biden for all of his deficiencies. And it certainly doesn't help eliminating him at this point because Biden's keeping some of the crazies down and making the barrier of entry into the race higher by virtue of him polling as high as he is. So this is so stupid. And of course, I have an idea about that. So stay tuned. I'm coming. Come right back after this. Explain what this is all about. Why Trump? Because let's take it at face value. Let's say Trump actually did call the Ukraine and demanded that Biden be investigated. Is it legal? Actually, you'll be surprised by the answer. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
Five, six, five, six, seven.
Murjovsky, Sam Nation. Mr. Biden, former Vice President Joe Biden, he has a son. And his son is, well, he had two sons. One passed away, if you remember, and he was, by all accounts, the good son. Joe Biden's got a bad son. I don't know how else to put it. No, honestly, his name's Hunter. Hunter Biden, you've heard about him. He left his family. Then he was sleeping with his deceased brother's widow at or around the time that his brother passed. He then, after that, broke apart. He then ran off and married some chick. And I've lost track of it. This guy is bananas. But he went to Yale. He became a lawyer. We won't hold that against him. And then he ends up on a board. And this is, by the way, this is while his dad is vice president. And here's the sequence of events. So the U.S. at this time, do you remember what was going on during the second half of the Obama administration in the Ukraine? Putin had come in and basically took over the Crimean Peninsula. And there was a pro-Russian government in that ended up getting replaced by a more pro-Western government. Although certainly not reform-minded enough. And it was this government that was working with the Obama administration to get money, because it's really at the end of the day all about money and influence. And the Obama administration was trying, I guess, in the big picture in a right way, to bring the Ukraine into the fold, and was using our tax money to do it. And there was a giant billion-dollar loan that was being talked about and developed. The deal points of it were being developed. And something about the Obama presidency, man, these people gave away money like it wasn't theirs, oddly enough. So they were a billion dollars. $1 billion going to the Ukraine. And Joe Biden was going back and forth and negotiating with them about terms and conditions of what they wanted. And in the middle of all of this, Hunter Biden, son of the vice president, ends up as a board member on a company called Burisma Holdings. It's a natural gas firm that is owned by an oligarch, a billionaire in the Ukraine with close ties to the government. Now, guess how much, when most people on board positions, they're not paid. They're paid an honorarium, even for really big companies. So I'd have to look. I don't want to completely talk off the top of my head, but a company like Apple, if you sit on the board of Apple and you're a big wig guy, you're not making money. It's not a super high paid position. You're getting basically enough money to cover your costs of travel and attendance of board meetings and maybe some reimbursement money. But this company, Burisma Holdings, that you've never heard of, right? This company, guess how much Hunter Biden is getting paid per month to sit on that board? $50,000. So what does that sound like to you, right? You got the vice president of the United States directly negotiating with the Ukraine. Do we give you $1 billion? Do we not give you $1 billion? Do we do this? Do we not? And in the middle of that, Mr. Biden Jr. gets a $50,000 a month, basically no-show job, right, being on the board of a company. When you're on a board, you go to maybe quarterly meetings. But that, my friends, is not the worst part of it. It's not. Just lean in for a second. The worst part of this whole thing is that in the middle of this deal, right, the Ukrainian government, their chief prosecutor, begins investigating this company, because this company's been bribing a lot of officials. They're not just bribing the vice president of the United States through his son. They're bribing other government officials, other inspectors, other important people in the Ukraine. So the head prosecutor begins looking into this. And that is when, and this is a documented thing, a number of people have written about this. Even Vice President Biden made some public statements about this. Hunter Biden made public statements about this. So this is not a crazy conspiracy theory. But right in the middle of all of this, President Biden demands that the prosecutor be fired. and he demands that he be, and he ties the firing of this prosecutor to the $1 billion loan that the United States was dangling, the Obama administration was dangling in front of the Ukraine. Lo and behold, the prosecutor gets fired and we all forget about it. And that, my friends, is it's this stink is going to explode. It's going to explode big time. And is Adam Schiff and the rest of the people on Capitol Hill who are chasing this down, are they oblivious to the fact that this is going to come back and bite Biden? No, not entirely. And by the way, one very reasonable read of the situation is that the Democrats don't, at least the congressional Democrats, right? They do not want a President Biden, because they are secretly, deep down inside, rooting for who? President Trump. 100%. Well, yeah. I mean, if you're in Congress and you got to run for office every 2 years and you're a Democrat, don't you want to run as a foil to Trump? It's all you got. If they're running in a Biden presidency, you might lose to a Republican. Think about that. All right, I'll get into what's legal next. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Rojofsky. You'll find him very interesting. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation. The question of legality in what Trump did is up for grabs to some extent. The read of this, and there's a great piece by Andy McCarthy today that came out. He breaks down, I think it actually published last night, but regardless, he breaks this whole thing down. And it comes down to some very arcane federal statutes and what these whistleblower suits and issues like this that come with, I guess, presidents making promises to foreign leaders in exchange for certain deals. The fact is, presidents, unfortunately, for better or for worse, I guess I should say, have plenary powers, have full authority to make deals in the area of foreign policy. There's exceptions to treaties that have to be run by and approved by the Senate. And then there's commerce, where Congress has some control. But there are very few minor exceptions to presidents crafting their own foreign policy. Now, what is healthy in all this process, and McCarthy column deals with this, is that you want tension between Congress and the presidency. This is the way our founding fathers wanted it, right? They wanted Congress to hold the executive branch accountable. Executive branch, in this case, getting a tremendous amount of power. And it's also natural for each branch to fight to wrestle as much power for itself. And that's what you're seeing. It's a food fight among the branches of government. And honestly, by the way, this is the way it's supposed to work. You want this, our founders wanted this tension. So no, in short, there was no law. Let's just suppose for a minute that Trump said, I want you to investigate this mess. I demand this investigation. We believe a crime occurred. And we need you to look into it. Was this prosecutor that was fired, is there direct evidence that a previous administration pressured you to remove this person to protect bribes being transferred to the son of a sitting vice president? That's a crime. Bribery is a crime. What isn't a crime is saying, if you don't look into this potential crime, we will withhold aid. Presidents can withhold aid for whatever reason. They just can't do it if Trump couldn't, for example, say, let's put it this way. since everybody thinks that Trump's getting that this is so bad for him. Imagine if Trump called them up. I'm going to withhold $1 billion worth of aid if you don't let my sons build a hotel in Kiev. I want a sweetheart deal. I want to build carte blanche. I want to build a beautiful giant Trump Tower in the heart of the old town of Kiev. That's the capital of the Ukraine. So that's a no-go. But saying, look into a crime, we want you to look into a crime, or we're going to get mad at you and we're not going to help you. You can do that. By the way, Obama did it. Obama, on his way out, demanded such an investigation from the Ukrainian government into, and here's a name from the past that you may recognize, Paul Manafort. Remember that whole thing? And nobody batted an eye. Oh, well, we've got, if there's collusion, well, we better look into it. Yeah, we have been hearing for 2.5 years from all of the Democrats how we don't want foreign interference in our elections. And there is more than reasonable suspicion that the Ukrainian government bribed a sitting U.S. vice president through his son. It's scandalous. And it goes to the heart of a case for foreign interference. Now, it's all history and water under the bridge, you could say, if it weren't for the damn fact that Joe Biden's running for president. And he wants back in at the levers of power that gave him this type of privilege, if you will, an ability. So as with a lot of these type of cases or situations, rather, where the world is just blowing up that Trump is done and it's over and he's kaput. And this is it. Democrats, handle this one with care. It will blow up on you something fierce. And if I was Kamala Harris or Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas, I'm telling you right now, is delighted. There is a rain dance going on in those headquarters, because for her, this is unwanted attention on Mr. Biden. Joe Biden, very quiet in all of this, by the way. Uh-huh. No doubt. Sam Rojofsky back right after this.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
I got through about half of the Corey Lewandowski hearing this week. What great television. I mean, the Democrats pulled him in there and they were out for blood. And Lewandowski, let me tell you, this guy is not a wilting violet or shrinking violet. Is that the expression? Shrinking violet. Wilting flower. Sorry, I'm ESL. So at any rate, they went after him with everything they got. And then, you know, when the big thing with the Lewandowski hearing is that the Democrats that are sitting there, the congressional Democrats on the House Judiciary Committee, they bring him in and they're trying to get at Trump, right? They want to get Trump. And guess what? Well, yeah, it's Jerry Nadler that heads up that committee, and he's a nincompoop. He's such a nincompoop. And the Democrats are all such nincompoops. They know that they can't really properly investigate this. So what do? They turn to a Democrat donor, a attorney who advises, who is a consultant to the Democratic caucus. And this guy, they bring him in to cross-examine, to interview the witness. And so what they do, the Democrats have an amount of time, and they basically yield that time to this outside person who's sitting there as a consultant. He's not even a member of Congress. Now, this happens in impeachment proceedings in certain cases. Historically, it's been done, and I don't think it. They put the Republicans put up a big fight about it. They said that the procedure wasn't done right. To me, what it does, it just shows you how absolutely useless these Democrats are. They're such idiots. They know that they can't even do it right. So they bring this guy in who, I guess, grills Lewandowski and gets nowhere, absolutely nowhere. So when the time goes over to the Democrats, Matt Gaetz, who's a Republican from Florida, asks, the Republicans then throw these softball questions at Lewandowski to give him opportunities. Boy, did this one landed. You've got to listen to this.
Mr. Lewandowski, do you have a thought as to why we continue to engage in a charade that is overwhelmingly opposed by the American people and fundamentally misunderstood by my Democrat colleagues?
You know, Congressman, I think they hate this president more than they love their country.
Yes! Amen. You know, Congressman, I think they hate this president more than they love this country. And on that point, we know that to be true. The Obama administration, if you remember this, 2008, Obama's campaign ran on the principle that America is not great, doesn't deserve to be great, shouldn't be great, that we ought to play ball with other countries and be a responsible part of the international community. And consequently, for 8 long, horrid years, Obama traveled around the world and bowed his head and apologized to everybody, and the libs loved it. There are some exceptions. But if I can cast aspersions across a wide group of people, which apparently is not popular these days, but I'm going to do it nonetheless. If I can say something about liberals as a group is that they do not love this country, do not feel patriotic the same way that conservatives do. Because for Democrats, for liberals, America, flags, patriotism, all of this is insensitive to minorities, is thoughtless of the feelings of immigrants that come here. And the fact is, and I'm saying this, right, as a son of 2 immigrants that left a few different countries along the way to land in America, very happy to be here. Speaking for my parents, hey, liberals, I want to let you in on something. Real immigrants, for the most part, very happy to see American flags, okay? Very patriotic. Love the red, white, and blue. Because to them, it's a beacon of freedom. And they, by virtue of their experience, by virtue of their what they've witnessed in life, can tell you that this place is exceptional. And to Corey Lewandowski's point, I don't think the left loves this country very much. And especially not a country that is led by a President Trump. And it's a strange thing, because when conservatives have a president in office that they don't like, their entire thinking, our thinking, right? Conservative thinking is what? We have a great country and we got to save it from this buffoon. But libs look at it this way. Whoa, there's a buffoon. Trump, I hate this country. I hate what this country stands for because of this idiot in office. And this is why we win. Sam Rzhovsky, back after this short break.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rzhovsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Sam Rzhovsky, okay, when we come back here after our mid-show break, I want to get into an alarming trend that is now afoot. We have a new scapegoat. I know it was 4 weeks ago that the AK-47 and the AR-15 rifles were basically single-handedly destroying this country. But now, flavored vaping, yes, vapor put into electronic gadgets that taste like candy, fruity pebbles, lemons? I don't know. I don't vape. But apparently there are a ton of flavors, which of course is the result of American capitalism and producing something for everybody. The marketplace is demanding this, and we see this based on all the vape shops that are everywhere and a bunch of people are vaping. Now, what's the trend that has me alarmed? The trend that has me alarmed, I will get into when we get back because, why do we do this? And Trump is doing this is, you guys, this is where Trump is basically a Democrat. Okay, don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
We shall fight on the airwaves. We shall fight on Twitter and Facebook. We shall broadcast our program, whatever the cost may be. And if Sam Nation lasts for 1,000 years, men will say this was their finest hour.
Hi, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation here on Saturday. Second hour of our great show. Coming from you deep behind the orange, from deep behind the orange curtain. And of course, we are, as always, rarely wrong, but always right. Now, I have three kids. My son, as you may know, is 12, and he's getting to that age where he will begin doing bad things. He won't, though. He won't. He's a good kid, but he will try bad things. And what do I mean by bad things? I hope it's not murder. Right, I hope it's something you can come back from. For most kids trying bad things, it's alcohol, tobacco, I guess now vaping, right? We've got marijuana, sex. Okay, these are and I'm a parent, I'll admit to you that I'm terrified of this. And it is a common conversation that my wife and I have at home about how we're going to navigate these upcoming years. Now, I have to tell you, at no point in my conversations with Sherry, as we are discussing our son's future and our fears for the types of things he will be exposed to in school by his friends, do we think, what can the government do to help us with this? Never. I mean, do you? I mean, are you sitting around really going, I really wish the government could come in here and help me with this? No. And the reason that you and I don't think about this, we don't think this way. Why? We don't think this way because, because you're a good parent. You got your shiz on lockdown. You have this handled. And if you don't, you will. You also understand an unfortunate truth that you can be the best parent in the world. You could be Joe Biden, still have a Hunter Biden. I don't know if Joe Biden was a good parent, but I'm guessing he probably was. I've heard he's a good dude. But his son's a crackpot. It's not Joe. Sometimes the best parenting, you just know, sometimes it doesn't work out. But the idea that the government has to come in and crack down, well, restrict, eliminate, outlaw flavored vaping because it is attracting so many young smokers. My first reaction to this nonsense is, Wait, hold the phone. Am I not responsible as a parent to some great extent for my child's well-being? And will you please at least respect my child enough and respect me as a parent enough to give me the opportunity to teach my child not to do this? This trend right now has me, I'm absolutely dismayed by it. And the fact that Trump is getting behind it shows you what he's, Trump's a liberal in so many ways, guys. All you left-wingers that call him a Nazi, you're out to lunch. Trump's a liberal guy, especially when it comes to the role of government. He does not see things the way we see it on this program. I personally think, as many of you do, that less is more when it comes to oversight, restriction, regulation. Also, can I just tell you this? When you have let's just say it's highly addictive. Let's give them the argument, because you've got this group, the concerned parents against vaping or whatever it is. And this insufferable woman is parading all of her Fox News, MSNBC, CNN with her son, her man-child son. Oh, I used to vape. Yeah, it's so good. All the kids are doing it. Oh, and I'm looking at the mom. I'm going, sorry, lady. Where were you in all of this? Maybe you should have spent less time out and about with your girlfriends and spent more time talking to your kid. Anyway, I'm just throwing that out there. But in this entire dialogue, we're forgetting what a bang-up job we've done in the past restricting things that people want that are addictive and that we outlaw altogether. I mean, I thought we were at a place right now as a society where we were starting to realize that the drug war, for example, didn't exactly work as we'd hoped. I mean, we've been putting people away for doing bad drugs for decades. There are people in prison serving drug sentences for decades. It didn't stop them. So pray tell me what exactly is going to happen when we outlaw these delicious flavors that supposedly are out there in the form of these, I don't know, these flavored vape devices. It's going to go underground. It's still going to be available. There's going to be a black market. It's going to cost a ton of money, and kids are still going to do it. I grew up in an era where marijuana, now we're getting hip to this. You know, we've relaxed it. But I grew up in an era where marijuana was a big deal. You caught with weed and you get, you know, you're getting arrested as a 16-year-old, right? And there was no weed at my high school. I wish this wasn't radio. I wish you could hear me winking at producer Robbie. He and I went to the same high school, so we are we are effective authorities on this topic. Robbie, in many ways, more than me. But at any rate, it's a joke, folks. This is a total joke. And the idea that regulation is the solution is an anti-conservative, anti-American idea. I believe in freedom. You believe in freedom. We all ought to believe in freedom to destroy our lives as we see fit. Now, what's interesting is, I'm not a scientist, but I've asked enough people that I trust about this. And again, decisions are being made right now, not based on science, not based on data, but rather on emotion and sensationalized stories. Oh, 20-year-old woman in coma from vaping is a headline. And what do we all do? We go, oh, God, this vaping thing is terrible. What are we going to do? Okay. Well, there's people that would rather, vaping is, I suppose the science is showing that it's much better for you than smoking tobacco. Okay, a cigarette is far, far, far more damaging to your health than vaping. Is vaping good for you? No. But is it better than inhaling tar and nicotine and ash into your lungs? every 10 minutes? You betcha. Would I rather my kid vape than smoke a cigarette? I don't know. Definitely, for sure. I'm only saying I don't know because I would smell the cigarette. I think I'd smell the cigarette smoke on him sooner than I would the vape. So I think it'd be easier to detect the cigarette smell. I'm pointing this out because we've lost our minds. And it's a knee-jerk emotional reaction to this, and we're about to do tremendous damage. There's a guy who testifies. His name is Mark Sliss. He testified to Michigan lawmakers the other day. There was an order that's going through Michigan to ban all flavors of oils that are used in these vape devices. And so it's not about the kids. Now, everybody, adults, cannot do it. And he talks about, he was very articulate, highly educated guy, and he's speaking to the lawmakers. And he goes, look, I was a 40-year smoker from about a decade in. The last 30 years, I tried to quit. And I couldn't quit. Nothing I did could get me to quit. But what happened is is that he found this vape shop. He walked in and he got a flavor and that was the day he walked out a non-smoker. And I think I don't know. This is such a short-sighted view that the government is taking. So yeah, when we come back, I'm going to play you a little snippet of what this guy has said in his testimony. The vape store owner from Michigan, you're going to love it. And I think that the gun debate, too, just so that we're clear, the gun debate dovetails into this perfectly. Don't go anywhere. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
In this present crisis, government is the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. And Sam Nation is the solution. Of course, you need jelly beans for that.
I remember a time when America was free. Well, I don't necessarily remember it, but when I was a kid, I listened to the KNX Drama Hour. And here in L.A., it ran on the CBS station on KNX 1070. And they would play, you know, the Jack Benny program. They'd play Sergeant Preston and his Yukon Dog King. The other show that they almost always had was Dragnet. And as you know, Dragnet was a radio program and it also became a TV show. Very, very popular. And it was a serialized dramatization of actual crimes that were committed and investigated in the 50s, 40s and 50s in Los Angeles. So I know that a number of those programs, the lead sponsor on them would be a cigarette company. And this is, of course, before all the science came out that confirmed that smoking would eventually kill you. And so I went back here and I started listening a little bit to Dragnet in all of this. And I wanted to find these ads. And I'm gonna play you one. Now, this is old-time radio. And the way these old-time radio shows played is that there was always a lead sponsor for the show. So you didn't have commercial breaks where you'd have, a 2-minute break and you'd run 3-4 ads for different sponsors. You have one main sponsor. So the show is brought to you, and in this case, it was by Chesterfield Cigarettes. And Chesterfield would start to open the show saying, hey, you know, we're brought to you by Chesterfield. They'd end with it. But in the middle of it, they would do a little infomercial. And they for a series of years, ran this infomercial in the middle of one of the most popular radio shows of its era that basically said to people that smoking was good for you. Especially if you smoked these high-quality Chesterfield cigarettes. Listen to this.
And now, a report every smoker should hear. Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields. First such report ever published about any cigarette. And it applies only to Chesterfield.
Yeah, so they, and it explains their methodology for 1 month, well, excuse me, 1 year and 2 months. They followed a select group of Chesterfield smokers, and the doctors, the team of doctors and researchers, would check their lungs and their noses and their sinuses and their anuses. I don't know what they checked. But apparently, in all of this high-quality research, they discovered that that smoking Chesterfield cigarettes was good for you, didn't harm you, at least. And I love that. I love the piece where it says that, what was it? And it applies only to Chesterfield. So, what do you think of this ad? Is it manipulative advertising? Yes! 100% it's manipulative advertising. 100% it's about greed, about this evil corporation that wants to make money, and it makes money by getting its customers to buy its product. And in this case, their product are little death sticks. Well, a lot of people smoked little death sticks and didn't feel that great. And the research came out, I think, the conclusive research that how dangerous smoking really was came out in the 70s. So at least 20 years after this ad aired. But it begets the question of what role government plays in our lives to protect us from our own stupidity. And I want to live in a world where I am allowed to hurt myself. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, of course, the world, according to Democrats, I certainly can walk into a clinic and have a doctor surgically remove my penis. All I have to say is, I think I'm Samantha. But God forbid that I walk into a vape shop and say, I want my Fruity Pebbles vape. Can't do that in a growing number of states. This is absurd. I read somewhere that in England, hospitals in the NHS, that is the National Health Service, the government-run health care system, they have vape shops inside of these hospitals. Because why? Because they have a vested interest in people not smoking, and they have found that the only way to get people to stop smoking the death cigarettes is to smoke the bubblegum-flavored, you know, delicious vape material out there that's available, and they're doing that. I'm absolutely blown away by this. So here is the testimony by Mark Sliss, the Michigan testifying to Michigan lawmakers to that, I believe, the State House Select Committee on this, and it talks about his business, but also a little bit of what will be an unintended consequence of this ban.
If the governor's order stands and flavors are banned, I will immediately go out of business and file for bankruptcy. No question. I've already talked to my accountant and my lawyer, and they agree. It's over. I think my experience will be mirrored across this state, and you'll see every vape shop close up, and owners file for bankruptcy, and employees be fired, lose their jobs. You won't just be banning flavors. You'll be banning a life-saving industry from this state, guaranteed. The results of that will be that everybody who's currently trying to quit will be forced back to smoking and trying to quit again. The other available methods have a 93% failure rate. That's what you will doom these people to. That's unforgivable.
Of course. And yet again, our government thinks they know best and responds with onerous restrictions to solve a problem that doesn't really need to be solved, other than to empower parents to be parents at home and keep their kids on the straight and narrow. And heaven forbid, I would rather my kid go and vape than do other worse things. Let's talk about that. All right, Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
I was listening the other day to a friend of mine. His name is Sam, Sam Majowski. You'll find him very anything. He's very stylish. He's always wearing his suit. And if you want to hear someone's opinion that absolutely is correct, you listen to Sam. Anyone else is a waste of time.
Sam Rogowski, you know, Kevin Hart, the comedian that got into that terrible wreck. I guess it was his car. It was a 1970 Plymouth Barracuda. It went off a cliff. He was not driving. It was a buddy of his that was driving. There's another guy apparently in the car. All of them very severely injured. Now, the good news is Kevin Hart left rehab, the rehab facility that he was at, and is apparently walking. He had, I think, three vertebrae that were broken that needed to be fused. Very, very significant injuries. And of course, and I want to talk about this as a personal injury lawyer, I give you some insight to this. Everybody's preparing their lawsuits. And they're all lawyering up and they're all going to sue each other. And I'll tell you how this works mechanically, because you're probably thinking, well, hell, aren't we going to sue the driver? I mean, the driver's probably the one that's at fault. And it's not necessarily true. And so there's no police report yet, and the investigation, obviously, and I think it was handled by CHP. The investigation is still going to take some time. And what's written in the report is helpful to determine liability in a crash, but it's not the final word. It's not the police report. It comes down to proving who was at fault in trial based on witnesses. And the witnesses, if they're in the police report, they have to come back and testify and give their oral testimony. It's actually the hearsay thing. You know, the whistleblower example I was giving you, words of another person. Well, that's what a CHP report is, or any accident report. They're words of another person put in another place, and it cannot itself testify or tell you what happened in an accident and in a court of law. So Kevin Hart's got a lawyer. He presumably, I don't know, will go after the insurance of the driver of the car. What's the driver of the car going to claim here? Well, I think the likely approach here is going to be that the Plymouth Barracuda didn't have, the 1970 Plymouth Barracuda that belonged to Kevin Hart didn't have any safety devices. So it didn't even have seatbelts, which was by the way is okay. Older cars didn't have seatbelts installed And I actually have a car that doesn't have rear seat belts, a car from the 60s. So it's not unusual. But here's where the case, I think, where a good case can be made. And that is, I understand that this Barracuda, this Plymouth, went in for an extensive redo, that Kevin Hart put it into a shop. And here's what a lot of these guys do. They put these cars in these shops. And I'm a big car guy, and I love this, and I like this movement of resto mods. I think it's a cool deal, but they put it in and they soup up the engine. They put an engine in there that is triple the horsepower. But then, for example, a lot of these guys, maybe not Kevin Hart because he's got some money, but a lot of guys that don't have the money to do everything fully, they don't even upgrade the brakes. So they put a big money engine in this thing, and boom, 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 and they're making a lot of noise, but they don't upgrade the suspension, they don't upgrade the brakes, and they certainly don't put in harnesses or roll cages or anything like that. And the cars, these cars, this particular car was I couldn't really tell from the pictures, but might have been a convertible. And if it's a convertible, you're putting a big engine in it. The car is going to just taco. It's going to literally just fold upon itself like an accordion if it hits anything. Cars from the 70s were not known for their structural integrity. And you're supposed to put money, if you're going to be fixing one thing on the car, you've got to bring it up to other standards along the way, including seatbelts. So apparently this car did not have upgraded seatbelts and did not have a roll cage. So that's where even the driver of the car will say, yeah, maybe I caused the accident, but if this car had this or that life-saving device installed in it, which it should have, I would be better off. And that's going to be how this case proceeds forward. So what are their chances of remaining friends? I don't know. Although I'm kind of a specialist at this, I have to tell you. You know, I've had a lot of cases where people are at, they're all friends and they all have competing interests. And I work with other firms and we get people represented and then work it out with the insurance companies and everyone gets compensated and it somehow works out. But this is a mess and they're all lucky. If you saw these pictures, they are all lucky to be alive. Holy smokes. It is a bang-up crash. All right. AR-15s, Beto O'Rourke. We come back, I'll tell you his flip-flop. And this is good stuff. And nobody's focusing on the flop. They're all doing the flip, but not the flop. I'll explain when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
You're looking for a show that doesn't sugarcoat the truth. Sam Nation will accommodate you.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, here on the Sam Nation Radio Network. Robert Beta Male Fake Kennedy, running for president with 0.002% support, is all over the map on this AR-15 ban. Assault rifle ban, national assault rifle ban. Now, he's gotten a lot of play for in the last debate. Was it the last debate? Now I've lost track of all of this. But he basically declared, hell yeah, we're going to take your AR-15. He's making T-shirts and embracing it as a campaign slogan. But I think it's hilarious because he keeps going back and forth. So he first at one point said that we should ban AR-15s. And then he put his thumb up in the air, you know, licked his finger, put it up in the air, and realized that the wind was not blowing from a favorable direction. And so he, after that, said this on a Lubbock radio show in April of 2018.
I own an AR-15. A lot of our listeners own AR-15s. Why should they not have one?
To be clear, they should have them. If you purchase that AR-15, if you own it, keep it. Continue to use it responsibly. And again, we support the Second Amendment. If you own a gun, keep that gun. Nobody wants to take it away from you. At least I don't want to do that.
Yeah, okay. So then the national mood, if you will, changes and people say, take your thoughts and prayers and shove it where the sun don't shine. And now, at last Friday's debate, here is Beta talking about taking away your AR-15.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore.
Hell yes, we're going to take your AR-15, your AK-47. We're not going to allow it to be used against our fellow Americans anymore. And the crowd of dupe Democrats all went wild. Now I... Back to our conversation about vaping for just a minute. In referencing actual harm, statistical harm, relative to our emotional feelings on the subject. Here we are, a country where we lose thousands upon thousands upon thousands of Americans every year to being fat A-money monies and shoving potato chips into their oversized pie holes. Yes, obesity kills, hundreds upon hundreds of times more people a year than AR-15s and AK-47s. This is such a joke. Handguns kill more people than AK-47s. Sedans kill more people than SUVs, and yet it was that evil SUV that rode all on its own into a shopping center in Chicago and wreaked havoc upon, what's his face? What was the guy who... Where? Oh yeah, Nips Fall Off. That guy. You know the difference between conservatives and liberals? We decide things based on facts. And we do not give up freedoms unless we are absolutely certain it is necessary, which is really never. We take every bit of freedom that Constitution gives us and we want to hold on to it because we do not want to be under the thumb of an oppressive government. Our nation, this great United States of America, was founded on the principle of such citizen autonomy from the state. And so if you want to, this election coming up, Trump, you know, I can't believe he's going for this vaping thing. I can, but, you know, I'm saddened by it. Generally speaking, when it comes to business, he's certainly all about reducing regulation. But don't think for a minute, right? If elections are about the lesser of two evils, all of these Democrats, they want a world where the government puts us in bubble wrap. But we are in bubble wrap. We are wrapped so tight that we'll be suffocating. We can't move. And we will lose so much of our cherished freedoms. It happens year over year. So you know what? Play it, Robbie, play it one more time. I want to live in the world of Dragnet. Honestly, I do. I do. Play it one more time.
And now a report every smoker should hear. Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields. First such report ever published about any cigarette. And it applies only to Chesterfield.
Yeah, me and my auxiliary organs. we're definitely not all in for this ban everything movement. What else are we banning? Humor? For sure. Let's talk about that when we come back. Almost done with the program. Where does this go? Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation on the Sam Nation Radio Network.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, on the show tonight is Sam Rojofsky. Now, what Sam is the leading word in correct thinking, as opposed to Ed, which is drunk thinking. And that's usually where the left ends up, on the wrong side of right.
Right after we did the program on Friday, Shane Gillis ended up getting fired, let go by SNL, right before he, I guess, right as he got hired. He didn't even do his first Saturday night live. Because Saturday morning, he was killed off the program. Why? Because he used a derogatory term to describe Asian Americans. Now, an interesting take on this was by Andrew Yang, the Asian guy who's running for the Democratic nomination, talking about forgiving Shane Gillis on CNN with Jake Tapper and paying particular attention here to the second half of his remarks, because I think he's spot on here.
There have been a number of reactions to my call for forgiving Shane Gillis, and I've experienced a lot of anti-Asian racism throughout my upbringing, and it hurts, you know, and it's something that's very real. And I do think anti-Asian racial epithets are not taken as seriously as slurs against other groups. But at the same time, bigger picture, I believe that our country has become excessively punitive and vindictive about remarks that people find offensive or racist, and that we need to try and move beyond that if we can, particularly in a case where the person is, in this case, to me, like a comedian whose word should be taken in a slightly different light.
Of course. Which is exactly why we need to forgive Justin Trudeau. Because, well, you heard about this. Justin Trudeau went, some pictures surfaced, three separate incidents of him putting blackface on and going to costume parties. I never heard of this Andrew Yang idea that there should be a double standard for comedians. I guess I say that Justin Trudeau ought to be quickly forgiven by that standard since he is himself a comedian. There's absolutely nothing serious about the prime minister in Canada. I don't know why anybody is surprised by any of this. This virtue signaling useless ninny wet noodle of a man-child who's been embarrassing Canada at such an epic level. By the way, I know we have some loyal Canadian listeners, but you know, I am a patriot and I have strong feelings about Canada. Trudeau is a new low, but look here, this Gillis guy. This Gillis guy was a comedian. He was making a joke. It was not a tasteful joke, in my opinion. I don't know if I would have said it, but whatever. He's joking. It's comedy. And we, you know, last week we talked about this with Dave Chappelle, and Dave Chappelle can get on. I understand there's a double standard here, but forgive me. If in this country we are okay with Netflix paying Dave Chappelle $100 million to stand up and use the N-word 400 times, then I don't see how Shane Gillis can get... I just don't get this. I think it's a total overreaction. Now, as for Trudeau and blackface, what's going to happen? I don't see this guy getting... He was already in hot water. So what did he do to get himself out of this mess? Two things. One... He gave this apology.
What I did hurt people who shouldn't have to face intolerance and discrimination because of their identity. This is something that I deeply, deeply regret. Darkening your face, regardless of the context or the circumstances, is always unacceptable because of the racist history of blackface. I should have understood that then, and I never should have done it.
Now, what's really at play here is, I don't know, some of this took place 20 years ago, 19 years ago. I mean, we're a lot more sensitive today than we were back then. And I'll tell you this, I always say on the show that I don't believe in judging yesterday's acts based on today's standards. And so it always bothers me when we do that. But what really bothered me in this entire story is that to get himself out of this, Justin Trudeau made this statement and then immediately pivoted to a national campaign on confiscating Canadian AR-15s and other assault weapons. This guy is such a useless piece of nips fall off. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation. What a show. See you here next week.